incredible show today. Direct from the UFO Congress, I'm Jerry Pippin, along with Paula Harris. We have Dan Burrish and Marcy McDowell here. I'm sorry, Marcy. I must compliment both of you. We're here in the lobby just between shows or presentations, and it's hard to concentrate, but you guys are doing great.
Well, thank you.
We might sign you up for a maybe we will.
The word "sign me up" put a pause to me there.
You were signed up once, weren't you?
20 years ago.
Yeah, that was enough. Okay, so let's get back to your Area 51 and your J. Roddy. I know for a fact that your father told me that you had a lot of compassion for J. Roddy. That you felt he was in deep pain. He originally
introduced himself, he was physically and emotionally in deep pain. He introduced himself originally to me as captive.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was at a time that he also knew that he was giving himself willingly for the purpose of trying to find an amelioration to the neuropathy. He knew that his mother had given him for that purpose.
Yep.
That she knew of it. Every time I had to remove a sample, which came to several hundred finally, with the use of the PINS system, which was a pressurized avulsion sample removal system,
mm-hmm.
From his tissue, it caused him great peripheral pain. Now, at the time, I was speaking with him, so he was in training me to his emotions as well. So every time I removed a sample from him, I felt it removed
from
my arm as well.
You were beginning to feel the pain yourself.
Indeed,
well,
sir.
In fact, it was so much so that you had to adopt a different way of utilizing the sampling device, because every time you would hit the pressure, if you were using the arm that it was sampled out of,
it hurt.
Then it would cause a problem. So you had to actually modify your own way of doing the sampling.
Indeed I did. And however, in some cases with some of the peripheral nerve branches, there was nothing I could do. I needed to remove the sample, so I got it done. But they had warned us ahead of time.
This was a natural thing that had happened to him, not as a result of a crash or something.
This was a natural CIDP like chronic immune demyelinating polyneuropathy that also took on some very unusual other biological concerns that I'm sure the audience isn't going to be interested
in.
Actually,
they might be. Just give it a... You might as well just explain a little bit about it.
Okay, well, the J-Rods had a secretion system in their skin, magnified glandular system, paracrine and apocrine and a few merocrine glands, which would actually produce various classes of antifreeze glycoproteins. Now, the man that I studied under, who led me ultimately to the higher degree level, I've got to be careful about this because of our agreements, was in fact an expert in glycoproteins. And in fact, one of my jobs during my education was to use his text and to essentially memorize it by rote. So I did. But the situation was that as the neuropathy progressed, the branches of the glandular system, which would produce the antifreeze glycoproteins, gradually became... Well, I wouldn't call it atrophied. I'd just say that it was exnervated. There was a pull off, if you will, of the nervous tissue from the gland, thus causing the gland to undersecrete. Now, one of the functions, one of the evolutionary adaptations that they undergo, is an increased exudation of that particular type of antifreeze glycoprotein to keep them warm. It's a matter of thermal hysteresis. One of the bad situations involved with this polyneuropathy, aside from the fact that there was pain involved and other tissue anomalies which would develop due to the loss of nerve function, also some coordination problems, et cetera, was the fact that they were not secreting sufficient antifreeze glycoprotein to keep themselves warm. So we had a hypothermia issue, and many of them were, in fact, succumbing to hypothermia.
Yeah,
so this was a progressive problem.
Inside the sphere, what was the temperature that he lived in?
It was extremely cold. We're talking in the 20 to 30 degree region. I don't know the exact Fahrenheit temperature.
And why was that? Was that more like his home planet? Or?
Well, it was more like Gliese, where he had actually become accustomed to.
Okay.
They produced a jump-off point in the Aquarius system, which is, in fact, the origin of the name for Project Aquarius. That, of course, was gobbled up and secreted back in 1953 when Aquarius was taken out from underneath U.S. Air Force control and taken into the IC community.
This is also called a Hotel Aquarius, so look at the synchronicity.
That's why we're here.
I wanted to talk about J-Rod somewhat, because I think people are fascinated. You talked about all the problems that this being had. But, you know, the Ulhouse picture has him in clothes, in human clothes, and what you drew has him kind of oozing out. You said they had oozing out this kind of oil from his skin, but was he clothed?
What 7,000 years will do, huh?
Yeah.
The bottom line to the situation is that in 1953, in fact, there was a downed craft near Kingman. It went down in a rocky wash area. There were three occupants on board the craft. They were here for technological exchange, which Bill Uhouse was part of with one of the occupants. That occupant that he interacted with was taken to Los Alamos, national facility, the laboratory at Los Alamos. The occupant that I interacted with was taken first to Groom Lake and then finally to the former biowarfare facility at Papoose. So these were two different J-Rods from 7,000 years different, and I drew the spy.
Now, when did you realize there was a timeline involved? Right off the bat, or did this... In other words,
the first person that actually told me that he was a traveler in time was the J-Rod, was Kaela.
He himself.
He was the first one that actually admitted to me where he was from and why. But he didn't tell me everything.
Did he want to go home or?
He did.
He did.
He did.
So
he also knew that he was serving a greater purpose by putting up with what he was putting up with.
Marcy, if you want to jump in here too, in your own idea about were we treating him correctly or not?
I don't think so. My personal impression, no.
Yeah.
No, we weren't.
When
we first got hold of him, we thought that he was part of the rogue contingent from the group that he was actually infiltrating to try to gather information. Immediately he was locked down, and he started calling himself a captive because he wasn't part of that group. That was one of the people that Uhouse was interacting with. This particular person found himself locked down, and he was not happy. And he was also being, in my opinion, mistreated by the behavior modification methods that they chose to employ when he wasn't as cooperative as they wanted him to be.
True.
So I don't think it was well treated at all.
It sounds like they would go in and zap him or something.
Well, they would use pressure, and the pressure increases created an awful lot of pain, and he was already suffering because of a neuropathy. I'm not the scientist. So that made it worse.
His tissues.
It was terrible.
His tissues. Now, I'm going to use the word density here. And coming into contact with that word with some of the individuals that I've spoken with during the time that I've had a chance to interact with the public, they may be using the term a little bit differently than I'm intending upon its use. I'm meaning mass over volume. His density was significantly less. He was less dense physically. His tissues were of greater hydration, and he was less dense. There was greater distance, if you will, between the cells.
In other words, are you saying more liquid?
In fact, yes. Right. Yes, he was much more liquid-like. very jelly-like. And so when there was a pop of the repress valve, when they would intumess him, it would cause him to collapse on the floor of the clean sphere and writhe in pain.
You also mentioned that he had a family, and this is the thing that really got to me, because I had been told by Clifford Stone, who had done crash retrievals, that some of these beings have families, and you mentioned, he mentioned he had a son.
Indeed, so and he was in great pain because he could not, at the time that, well, he wanted to go back to ultimately see his son again, go forward, if you will, go forward.
It's one of those paradoxical issues. We'll get into that in a minute because we've kind of glossed over that, but a lot of people are familiar with the story. Go ahead, Dan.
He expressed to me personally a great deal of pain for not being able to show his son how he felt openly, and his son couldn't show it back to him, because if his son did, he would appear out of line with his own culture and emotions and families. They had breeding groups, but they had, a loose family system, but the love was still there, the heart was still there, the human heart was still present.
How did they procreate? Same way as us?
By sexual intercourse.
Except
there are innovations involving their external genitalia.
Different techniques, which we won't get into on this show.
I don't really think I want to, no.
If I
fall into trash cans just looking at females, what can I say?
Tell us briefly. The future is not good, and they're coming back to try to change it. What is happening here?
No.
Is great, then.
The future is what we make it.
Okay.
No more, no less. We're in a time right now, a time that we've been in since 1980. This is a time of the passage of the sun on the plane of the galaxy. It's a time which has been foretold and looked for in the last, I guess it was 5,125 years of the Mayan calendar. It's a time that 12,800 years ago, the Vedic literature called a golden age. It's a time that around the same amount of time ago, the ancient Egyptians called the zero time, the Zepi Tepi, a time of great promise. Just because we've interacted with these creatures of a various timeline doesn't posit for us the tragedies of their history. We make our future for ourselves. And what I see with the people and the promise that I see around the world today is a positive future for humanity. Now, indeed, their future records that a great catastrophe occurred on or about now.
Right.
And so what? And so what? We're here now. You're sitting across the table from me. You folks are sitting across the table. We're here now. We're the people who are making the future for everyone and for ourselves. So just because there are paradoxes which have occurred and which may be overlaying here and there in our perception, people have time shifts and this sort of thing, and there's more and more of it occurring the closer we're getting, I think, to that divergence time or that convergence time, however you want to look at it. But we've been in this time now since 1980. We're in the time, in accordance with what I have learned from the Majestic, which was called, and beware, because I'm going to keep talking here after the word, the season of catastrophe from the Cross of Hyundai. From 92 to, I believe it is, 2012, which was considered the greatest time of risk, and so what? We know the things from their history, which according to their history, promoted their own history to produce a catastrophe. Now, look, we have a problem knowing what happened 2,000 years ago. The little person that I had the great privilege to speak with from 94 through 96 and then again at the end of 2003 is talking about something that happened 52,000 years before his time. 52,000 years. We've got a hard time dealing with something that just happens a few hundred years ago. Of course, histories are written by the victors, too. These are human beings that we're talking about here. Human beings lie. The ones which are closer to us, meaning the ones 45,000 years ahead, lie more. However, the one that I was interacting with was a good enough liar to be a spy.
Really?
So, could he lie? Sure. Sure. But the operating knowledge that we worked under was in concert with what I was hearing from him as well. So, you could say that we were all agreeing upon a lie, or we all knew what we were, what was the truth. The best we can do is interpret from what we've learned. We make the future for ourselves. So this catastrophism business is a bunch of nonsense.
Thanks for saying that, because this has been one of the problems around your story, okay? And you at least have it cleared it up.
Well, look, the Mayan calendar has nothing to do with a lot of this transient doomsday catastrophism business. Yes, the Mayans said that we were going to face a time of cyclic change. They believed in cycles. They believed that we would enter a chaotic period before a time of renewal. Renewal doesn't say death. It says renewal. We're going to be fine.
On an optimistic note from Dan Burrish, we're going to take a break. Paula Harris, Marcy McDowell, and Jerry Pippin will be back in a moment.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
They've been latching on to the things that I have said, and they've been adding on to them and saying, oh, this is Planet X, oh, this is Nibiru. No.
Yeah.
It is what I experienced and no more. Now, if somebody wants to add to it, there's nothing I can really do about that or say about that, aside from the fact that's not what I'm saying.
You're listening to Paula Harris, Marcy McDowell, and Dan Burrish, and we're discussing some of the misconceptions and the spin other people put on things. And that's one reason you both have agreed to do the show today, and we appreciate you coming by. This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the UFO Congress. Only one more thing, and then we'll get into you're going to do a series of DVDs, and what are they going to find on these DVDs? We'll ask in just a second, but I want to follow up. You mentioned MJ-12. Admiral McConnell has been rumored to be one of the top guys, if not number one, by many people. He just was appointed to a top government position. Did you ever meet Admiral McConnell? Or can you say?
What I can say is what I said in a formal statement to the public, that and this was prior to the retired Vice Admiral's nomination hearing before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And that is that I could have thought of no better individual to set in the position of in the office of the DNI than he.
Then you do
save that. Save that. I
perhaps respectfully decline to.
Uh-huh. In other words, you have personal knowledge of him. You've been with him, probably.
Well, happened?
I'm just assuming that.
What's happened is this: on August the 12th of 2005, I was provided with an unambiguous set of final orders, and that was to complete the debriefing that had already begun, ostensibly just for archival purposes. I had no intention on the debriefing. As God is my witness, I had no intention on it even becoming public. I was going to hand the archive to her, and wherever it was going to go from there, it was going to go, and I was going to go back to my research, which I'd really like to do any time.
And yet here we are.
But the set of orders was unambiguous, and that was that I was to apply my good word, my sacred honor, and tell the truth about what I experienced. So I debriefed for many, many hours over all of these subjects, and from what I understand now from Marcia, she is in fact going to put these out. Well, we had a short period of time that I was supposed to put out a particular set of information which contained the truth of the situation in which we currently find ourselves and the truth involving the so-called Greys, the J-Rods. I did so, and we named it Tell the World. Actually, she
named it Tell the World.
Tell the World.
We have a few of those DVDs at my table after this talk.
And for our listening audience and people around the world, they're available on your website,
yes.
Right, Marcy?
Yes, the EaglesDisobey.net website. We have them available for anybody who would like them. We're also going to be doing several more. The first one had to be done on a particular time frame in order to comply with orders. However, I'm at my discretion to do the rest of them. And there's so much material in the debriefing that we've already got in the can, it seems a shame not to share it with people.
Now, speaking for a moment about orders.
Are you retired?
I am, sir.
Okay.
In the final set of orders, which were unambiguous to me, it did not say that I was to name the individuals who had been seated members of either the 12 or the Committee of the Majority, which preceded them as their cover committee. On the Jeff Rentz radio show, in fact,
You went to the edge of the pizza on that.
I went near the razor and provided initials for the individuals who were last seated in the 12, and they are true and correct to the best of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can't make these individuals, men and women, stand up, erect themselves, and speak to the world the truth that they told me to basically be the bag man for. I can't do that. I'm not their apologist. They have to live with themselves, and they've got to talk to their God. I have to talk to mine. What I will say is this. You've been lied to. They've been telling you that your vain speculation should not be undeceived by your senses, that you are not seeing what you are seeing, you've not had happen to you what has happened to you, and it has. I don't have permission to say this, but I did hold a number for a very short period of time, so that makes me responsible. On behalf of the 12, I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you've been lied to. I'm sorry the government has decided that you couldn't handle the truth. I apologize to you.
This is Paula, what this is really all about is that Dan has a lot of emotion, a lot of ethics. I mean, at one time, I think you were going to be a priest, weren't you, Dan?
Yeah, but this is what
yes,
happens.
Yes, sir. They broke off the training with me nearly after they started it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I still hear the same calling. That was honest. I was going to go in and, in fact, I entered St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park, California, and I had full intention of becoming a priest. They said that it would be, because they recontacted me prior to entrance to St. Patrick's, they said, well, it'll probably be a good idea you get right with God. And I said, I don't think you folks understand. I'm really planning on going through to ordination, so if we can work this out with the church.
Yeah, you're right.
But after a short period of time in St. Patrick's, I decided that there was many ways to follow God, and that what I was seeing was incompatible with my personal view on how I was to follow the God that I have to talk to before I go to sleep every night.
Yeah, and the reason I even brought this subject up is how do you square all of this, your early religious teachings and what you now believe? I mean, is it together or is it totally a different shock?
I imagine you could call me a lapsed Catholic. Now, I haven't been to church in a great period of time, but I pray every night to the same God that everyone does.
In other words, what I'm getting to is...
It only magnifies God. What I experienced as part of Majestic, and yes, I'm a scientist. I do believe in you know, the weighing out of items and the testing of items, but science is a whim of humankind. It's new on the scene. God isn't.
Did J-Rod have a religious faith?
Indeed. He had a cosmic belief in a cosmic love, a cosmic mechanic, if you will, that he referred to in the same way as Christ.
In other words, agape love, that type of thing that you talked about
regarded, in seminary. He regarded our view of the Ankh as being the true cross because of the symbolism of it being the plane of the galaxy and the loop above and then to below it, which we can also, you know, regard as the tear sac and the...
So do you think there's a certain timing to this? This is why you feel the way you do about talking. I feel the way you do about apologizing. This is... A lot of witnesses have come forth, and Colonel Philip Corso is the one I'm thinking of right now. A lot of witnesses have come forth to say it's time to tell the truth. And do you consider yourself... Because of the timing right now that it's the case?
If I didn't... of course, I came at your behest, but if I didn't believe that the truth needed to be told, I wouldn't be sitting here. I don't see myself sitting in a period of history. I'm just here now. I think history needs to judge the time now, and I don't think that I'm capable of doing that. What I see is where we are now and the promise that we have in our future, and that's what I'm focusing on, and hopefully within the next few years you're going to be maybe hearing something very promising from our research.
We're
heading towards something.
Dan, you're in my book, and I'm going to talk about the Exopolitics book. Your interview is in my book because it's very important. It talks about two things, time travel and stargates. And time travel and stargates are two of the very key points of the whole UFO phenomenon. And I think that people should listen to what you have to say because you're trying to tell us as much as you possibly can without going over about these two situations. And the fact that we can change a timeline, we can change it, it's entirely up to us, gives hope for humanity.
Moment by moment, the consciousness studies which are present now with Princeton, for instance, with the Global Consciousness Project, the eggs that they have worldwide, and various consciousness studies which are going on prove the power of positive thought, that we're creating our own future with our positive thought. And I see a renaissance in our future. This is what I honestly see for us. And I hope that in some small way, with the research that we're doing, we may be able to help with that. I hope to God that we can.
Are a lot of ETs with us and among us now? Or are they all time travelers? I guess they are one way or the other.
The only extraterrestrial intelligences which I was directly involved with, and this includes involving the Tau 9 Treaty situation, were Orions, which were at P plus 52,000 years, a set of J-Rods at the same time frame, which was the time frame of Kaela, and a P plus 45,000 J-Rod, which we call the Rogues, which are extremely self-centered. They are the ones that experiment on us. And I did what I could as part of, for the short period of time that I was involved with the treaties, to stop.
Experimenting with J-Rod.
It's not. Okay. And I'm going to tell you why it's not.
Okay.
It was a programmed operation within the Committee of the Majority, and then finally within the final Majestic group prior to their quiescence. It was a programmed issue to allow a certain number of world citizens to be picked up in the middle of the night. I was one of them.
And we talked about it early in the program. Right.
I'm just like you, if it happened to you. No better, no worse. And that is wrong. And I stood up against that, or at least I tried to, with what small voice I had at the time. And I also tried to pull certain things to help politically move it in a different direction.
Well,
and finally, when the final treaty was signed, the 9-6 treaty, it was, in fact, removed as an official treaty option. There is no need to justify a wrong. And I wouldn't personally sit there at a treaty negotiation table and say, yeah, it's fine. It's fine because what? People are not going to know that we're doing it? I have to look at myself in the mirror every morning.
What did they get in response for picking up people? What was the deal like? I mean, you could pick up people and then we get something?
They received a certain number of people that they could randomly or by statistical population sampling pick up to attempt to ameliorate the problem on their own as part of their agreement not to set other agreements with other countries, which is what set the Committee of Majority in place in the first place. In 1963, this was brokered so that the Soviets would not start brokering their own treaties with the rogues.
Okay.
I'm sorry for being passionate about it, but
no,
people are being hurt, and it's wrong.
What's the future bring us on this issue alone? Is Majestic still in business?
Majestic is not.
Okay.
There is a new group, and there is a permanent wall.
And what do you think about the new group? Are they?
I don't know. I have met liaisons from the new group, but only met liaisons. And
overall,
I really don't want to poke my nose
anymore
because I'm tired.
And our time's almost up, but overall, you're fairly optimistic, and looks like maybe we've done a lot of things that weren't right, but maybe the future will change. You seem to be optimistic about it.
I am.
That's one reason you came here, I think.
When you get human beings in the mix, you always have problems. But, yes, I'm optimistic for the future. I'm optimistic for a bright future for us, and I'm optimistic because people are learning. They are understanding what's going on around them, and there are more and more cracks in the eggshell, so more and more light is starting to shine in. And the more light you shine in, the more the demons will run away.
We have only a minute left. Anything you need to bring out here that we haven't covered? Either one of you? Did we do a pretty good job?
Just for me to say thank you to you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed meeting you, Dan. We've talked many times. Marcy and
great
I...
Great pleasure. Thank you so much.
We're old pals by now, and... Paula is just an asset to this whole UFO agreement, and last year when she went down to meet with you guys, that was wonderful.
Well, we feel really privileged to be a part of your presentation and actually to be friends with you both.
Yeah.
It's actually our privilege.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you're writing some of this for Area 51 magazine.
Yeah, Area 51 magazine. It's in Italian, but it still gets disseminated all over the world. But just know that the world knows.
Right.
Yeah, the world knows what's happening, and it is a planetary situation, and we need to remember that.
Okay, one more time, your website.
EaglesDisobey.net.
And we have a link to that, of course. And that's our time's up. Thanks, Paula Harris. Thanks, Marcy McDowell. I keep wanting to call you. And also Dan Burrish. It's always been a pleasure talking to you. Even on Christmas Eve, we corresponded one time.
Indeed, we did.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
And so it's been a pleasure. And thanks for coming by and going public with us.
Thank you.
And our on location producer is Roberta Scott. I got to get her title right, because yesterday I said she was in studio, and that's not true. That's Jane Swartley, who's editing the shows. See, I got to live with these people. I got to get it right, and I did this time. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you.
This is Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.